Marcus is 19 years old. Sure, he's unemployed, but many 19-year-olds are. And he's receiving money from his mother. And he's in fact, part of this group called the Sneakerheads. So I do not think, and I didn't think it at the time of trial, that the state has shown that there was, in fact, a plan in place to commit this robbery. And Judge Silver, you asked about the sex assault cases, and I think those are factual questions as well. Well, did the guy in the van have certain things in his van that would lead one to believe that he was, you know, going to commit a sexual assault? Oftentimes we watch these shows, Dateline or what have you, the guy lures a child over, they bust him, and oh, what does he have with him? Well, they told him to bring condoms and licorice or whatever, and he brings those things. That can show some intent on the part of that sexual assault perpetrator. But in this case, we've got a guy who the evidence shows is part of the sneaker group, enjoys purchasing, selling sneakers, doesn't disguise his identity, uses his co-defendant's phone. So that goes against this planning. Either they're the worst planners in the world when it comes to the kidnap robbery, or they simply rob these people out in front of a very public apartment complex, and that's all that this was. And with that, Your Honors, I do not have anything more. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions? Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We thank both parties. This case will now stand submitted for decision. And again, if either of you can stay to talk to the students, that'd be great. If you're too busy, that's okay too, but I'm sure, especially with the criminal case, the students may have some questions. So,
thank you.
All right, so we will take the next case, which is Wasman versus Aria Resort and Casino Holdings, LLC, et al. That's case number 68635. I will state on the record for both parties that the media has requested coverage of this event because this is here at ATEC, and I just want to make sure that we put on the record from both sides whether or not there's an objection by the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honor. The appellant has no objection.
Respondent.
Respondent, no objection.
Great. Thank you both so much. And thank you both for being here as well. I'm sure you're aware that our courthouse, we're literally in boxes and in the process of moving, so we appreciate this educational event, but also it really helps us out as well, so thanks for coming here to ATEC. I'm going to just wait one moment while the kids are switching classes. They're moving around right now. For the teachers at ATEC, should we wait a moment to begin this one, or are you going
to?
Okay, I saw some of the kids leaving. Okay, great. All right, and having said that, we'll begin our argument, and again, I'll ask both parties, if you wouldn't mind, please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chief Judge Silver, Judge Gibbons, Judge Tao. My name is Kendalee Works with Christie Hansen Law Offices, and I represent the appellant in this matter.
And just for the record, we have another, if you'd also introduce your co-counsels.
Also with me today is Peter Christiansen from Christiansen Law Offices.
Thank you. All right, we can proceed. Oh, would you like rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor, 5 minutes, please.
5 minutes. Thank you. Whenever you're ready, you can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Today, February 21st, 2017, marks the four-year anniversary to the date of the date of Sandra Sutton. 4 years ago, on that morning, my clients, the Boston family, learned that their mother and wife had burned to death in the backseat of a taxi cab on Las Vegas Boulevard. That fiery crash was the last in a series of events of physical altercations involving prostitution and the brandishing of weapons that began at the Hayes nightclub on the premises of Aria and continued into the Aria Valet onto the streets of Las Vegas Boulevard, where Amar Harris ultimately fired shots into a Maserati. The Maserati careened into the intersection of Las Vegas Boulevard and Flamingo, and the explosive crash ensued that took the life of Sandra Sutton. Sandra Sutton's death was preventable, but for the willful ignorance of the ARIA. The ARIA's decision to not act, despite knowing that essentially the licensees, Hayes, the nightclubs on its premises, were fostering an environment conducive to prostitution, drugs, and other gun violence. In addition to having prior notice from the Gaming Control Board, the ARIA also had specific notice on the night in question that a gun had been brandished in its valet area and that there were patrons in the valet involved in escalating physical confrontations. Rather than act, rather than make even the most minimal of steps by contacting law enforcement to the area, or, as the record indicates, detaining any of the individuals involved in the altercation, the ARIA turned a blind eye to the altercations and the physical violence on its premises.
Under what pretense would they detain Harris under, since he was not the one necessarily with the gun in the valet? How would they have detained him as a citizen?
Your Honor, the testimony, at least the sworn statement, which came out after the motion to dismiss that was before the court on the 60B motion, of the security guard from Hayes that escorted Mr. Harris through the valet area, was that he was involved in a heated altercation with another known pimp. The altercation was with respect to whether or not one pimp versus the other had rights to a particular prostitute. And one of the things that ARIA routinely detains individuals for, by virtue of their own valet attendant's testimony, is solicitation and prostitution type activities. So you have this escalating physical confrontation. It's around 4 o'clock in the morning. People are visibly intoxicated, and there's allegations also of drug use at that time as well. So you have the physical altercation, and then if you watch the video, you have people loitering back and forth for a period of at least 23 minutes from the time the gun is first flashed on screen until the time that Amar Harris is permitted to actually leave the valet area. So at a minimum, the ARIA could have taken the step of contacting law enforcement to respond to the area when you have multiple confrontations taking place in the valet area within a 23-minute time span, in which your own security or your own valet has reported to your security department that there is a gun being brandished and that it's a physical confrontation and that someone needs to respond.
And what if, after they've detained him, just like in the Rodriguez versus Prima Donna case, they evict him and they say, get off the property. How would that have changed anything here? I mean, I guess that my question is, how do you distinguish the Prima Donna case from this case? Where would this court define the zone of risk or zone of danger once a person leaves the property, like ARIA? At what point does liability stop or end?
Well, here, we're not asking the court to find that there was actually liability, but rather that the plaintiff, the appellants in this matter, should have been able to conduct discovery in the case below in order to ascertain the totality of circumstances and any prior similar incidents of misconduct. It's difficult to answer the court's question about the zone of risk without having had the benefit of discovery and learning what the ARIA knew and what the full totality of the circumstances were. We are not asking the court to apply limitless liability and a limitless duty and obligation on patrons such as the licensee, but to affirm the district court's decision in this court at this level, this court would have to determine that there is absolutely no set of circumstances under which a business such as the ARIA could be liable to a patron off-premises. And that is contrary to Nevada law under Sanchez. It's contrary to the purpose of the gaming regulations and statutes and the health, safety, and well-being of Nevada's citizens.
So you're positing that there is, and obviously the standard on a motion to dismiss is there has to be some set of facts that could establish liability here. But the set of facts that you're positing to be true is kind of a long chain of events. You have the Spiderman's parking lot, and it culminates in a taxi cab exploding two blocks away. I mean, you know, the question here is really foreseeability. In your typical case, you know, in a casino, I don't know how often these things happen. Presumably there's fights, there's drunk people getting fights in the valley area. There's, you know, you mentioned prostitution, there's, you know, pimps on property trying to, you know, because there's tourists there, right? But these things typically lead to somebody getting punched, somebody getting a broken arm, some fist fight breaking out, somebody getting arrested for selling prostitution. has it ever happened before where it ended in, you know, in a fireball on Las Vegas Boulevard? I mean, that's really the question, is how foreseeable was this particular chain of events?
Certainly, it is a distinct chain of events and a unique set of circumstances, Judge Tao. The issue here is that foreseeability for purposes of causation, and what Your Honor has alluded to, is foreseeability with respect to causation as opposed to a duty necessarily at the outset. And in order for the fireball, for the fire crash, to be an intervening and superseding cause, for Amar Harris's criminal conduct to be an intervening and superseding cause, it would need to be unforeseeable to the aria. And foreseeability with respect to causation is a question of fact for a jury, not the court. So the district court erred in two ways. First, it determined that the aria had no duty as a matter of law with the absence of any evidence before it. So it could not, as required under Smith versus Mahoney Silver Nugget, assess the totality of the circumstances and prior similar incidents of misconduct. What the court just alluded to is the second error that the district court made, which was to determine that even if aria had a duty to Ms. Sutton, that Amar Harris' criminal conduct was an intervening and superseding cause of her death. But that is not a question for the district court to determine as a matter of law. Causation and foreseeability are a question of fact for the jury.
But the duty is as a matter of law. Wouldn't you concede that?
Your Honor,
the district court can make the determination as to duty as a matter of law.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I would concede that the district court can and may make that determination as a matter of law. But in order to make that determination as a matter of law, in Smith versus Mahoney Silver Nugget, what the Nevada Supreme Court said was that the district court has to assess foreseeability with respect to duty in the context of the totality of circumstances and prior incidents of similar misconduct. In this case, because the district court dismissed Aria prematurely, there was no evidence before it. And so the plaintiff was not permitted to ascertain the full extent of prior similar incidents of misconduct or the totality of circumstances in order to present the district court with that evidence.
But what about, you haven't distinguished the prima donna case from this case.
The zone of risk, Your Honor?
Yeah, right. How do you, our Supreme Court has already held in prima donna that, quote, a hotel proprietor is not liable for any torts that an evicted patron commits after he or she is evicted that result in injury. So even though Harris wasn't formally evicted, he left, encouraged to leave perhaps by valet, but he leaves. This is what we're looking at.
Well, Your Honor, the facts here are distinct because Mr. Harris wasn't evicted. The reality is that, and we may be arguing a totally different case before Your Honor, if it had been a situation where at least the aria took some responsibility and made some affirmative duty to act, and then he was evicted. The facts and circumstances could be totally different. Had he been evicted, Kenneth Cherry may have been far down the strip, far away in a remote location prior to that eviction, such that this crime would never have occurred. But that's speaking with the benefit of hindsight, Your Honor. So the facts of this case, what was before the district court and what's before Your Honors today, is the reality that the aria took absolutely no steps to either contact law enforcement or minimize the risk of harm by detaining, as it routinely does. This is a case where the aria routinely detains individuals with respect to suspected criminal activity on its premises and brings in law enforcement to address those issues. Now, if they had been evicted, we may well be in a totally different circumstance, but at a minimum, there would have been some responsibility, some duty and action taken on the part of the aria, which was not done in this case. And it remains a question of the totality of circumstances and prior similar instances of misconduct that the district court would need to determine the absence of a duty. That was not before the court, and it was an error of law. And
hang on a second. Let me just, he left. Okay, I mean, he left the property, whether he was trespassed or evicted or whatever, he left. So you're saying that they had a duty to what? To keep him on the property and detain him, as opposed to just booting him off the property or allowing him to leave voluntarily?
At a minimum, Your Honor, under the facts of this case, in these circumstances, knowing that there is a gun being brandished on the weapon on the premises, which is criminal activity, knowing that there is known prostitution and an argument over rights to a prostitute and solicitation, all of those activities are known crimes that the ARIA routinely detains individuals for. At a minimum, the ARIA, a sophisticated company with its own private security detail and team, could have contacted and should have contacted law enforcement That was the most minimal of obligations that it could have done in order to avoid the circumstances of this case. Beyond that, though, it could have, because it routinely does and has the authority to do so, detained the individuals involved in the altercation to ascertain who had weapons and who didn't. There was testimony in the record after the dismissal that Amar Harris did in fact have a weapon. We know he did because he later killed Kenneth Cherry on the Las Vegas Strip and was convicted of murder.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'll give you another 30 seconds because we've run over a little bit from, we can stop the clock. We've run over a little bit because of Judge Tao's question, so I'll put 30 seconds back on for you so that it's closer to 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Actually, you'll have looks like you'll have 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from a respondent. And again, please state your name for my clerk with your co-counsel.
Chief Judge, several members of the court, faculty, students, I'm Dennis Kennedy. I represent the respondent, Aria Resort. With me today is Sarah Harmon, one of my law partners, and also Riley Clayton, who is co-counsel with us on this matter. This case comes here following two decisions by the trial court. The first is a 12B5 dismissal of the amended complaint. The second is a Rule 60B motion for a new trial or other relief, which was denied by the trial court. As this court knows, the standard of review on 12B5 is de novo. On 60B, it's abuse of discretion. The questions from the court, along with everything that is in the brief, has allowed me to frame my argument pretty precisely. We're here really on one principal question, and that is, what's the duty of an innkeeper owed to the general public by harm caused by a former patron off-premises of the innkeeper, in this case, the Aria? And what duty is owed to the general public, meaning unknown and unidentified members of the public? And the answer, as was correctly determined by the trial court, is there's no duty owed under that situation and under the facts of this case, because that harm, the harm in this case, was unforeseeable. Foreseeability in this instance, contrary to the argument that counsel made, foreseeability in this case creates the duty. If the harm that happened is deemed to be unforeseeable, then there is no duty. And that's the first determination that the trial court made. Someone leaves the premises, travels a half mile more or less away, commits a criminal act, that is shooting someone in an adjacent car. That car careens out of control, hits a taxi cab, which explodes in flames and kills the passenger. The trial court said, look, there's no duty here to that passenger.
Well, how do you distinguish, Mr. Kennedy, the case of Anderson versus Mandalay Corporation? And for the students, that's a case where our Supreme Court just recently found a landowner liable for criminal acts that were foreseeable on its property. Here we've got Aria. It's a club that allegedly, you know, encourages debauchery. We've got allegations of pimps and hookers and drunks and people drugged up on things like Molly, the latest drug out there. And when you add the fact that there's in the record that Aria employees observed a gun in the valet area, why shouldn't this court extend the Mandalay case? Because arguably, isn't it foreseeable or a question of fact for the jury that at any time, any place, somebody could get injured from this type of action?
Well, the Mandalay Bay case is pretty easily distinguishable. First, it's an on-premises case as opposed to things happening off-premises. So you have a defined universe of people involved, that is, guests of the hotel. There's no question that Mandalay Bay owes a duty to its guests, and that duty is well established both by the common law and by statute. So the first distinguishing fact in Mandalay Bay is that the act in this case took place well off premises. Secondly, in Mandalay Bay, the question was not duty, it was vicarious liability of Mandalay Bay. And so what happened is the trial court and the Supreme Court said, well, what facts did you have once the legal duty is established? The next question is, what facts do you have or what facts are in the record with respect to proximate cause? Should Mandalay Bay have known there was some chance that this injury could occur by these means? And so they looked at what had happened on premises in the past and said, yeah, there, as a matter of law, there could be proximate cause here. But the big distinction is, in the Mandalay Bay case, legal duty exists. It's hotel operator and guest. In this case, in the Otter case, the trial court said there can be a duty.
There's lots of, in the context of a 12b-5 motion, right, we're looking at any set of facts that could have made this foreseeable, because we don't even have discovery yet, as your counterpart pointed out. I mean, there are certainly, we can envision lots of circumstances where the property may owe a duty to someone off premises, right? Anytime there's a handgun involved, the bullet doesn't stop at the property line. If I allow someone to recklessly discharge a firearm on my property, right, I think we'd all agree that it's at least plausibly foreseeable that the bullet is going to exit my property line and hit somebody off outside my property. And it would be a tough argument for you to say that I have no duty whatsoever to protect that guy just because he was over the property line, because it's foreseeable the bullets are going to travel. Now, I know that's not this case. What I'm asking is, on a 12b-5 motion, there's essentially we're asking us to make two determinations or to affirm the district court for making two determinations. Number one, as a matter of law, there's never any duty to someone off the premises, which I think, based on my one hypothetical, we can say that's probably not what you're arguing. The second one is there is no set of facts, no plausible set of facts, given what we have here in the complaint, that could have made this foreseeable to Aria, right?
You got about three questions.
Yeah, I know. It's a complicated thing, but yeah.
And the first is, we're not saying, no one has ever argued that under no circumstances can there be no duty to off-premises.
Sure. I mean, that'd be a ridiculous argument. If a guy's drunk and has a handgun and I just 86 him off my property, you can argue it's foreseeable that he's going to do something to somebody.
Well,
that's another, just as a hypothetical.
That's a hypothetical, but that really pushes up against the line of foreseeability. In this case, what the trial court did was it looked really at two cases. It looked at Mangeris, which is the taxi cab leaving the massage parlor, and then it looked at the Supreme Court's decision 31 years later in Sanchez versus Walmart. And the Supreme, it is clear that under both those cases and several other Nevada cases, but those are the principal ones, that the court can decide that there does not exist a duty as a matter of law because that particular harm is unforeseeable. Now, back to your second question. Somebody on property fires a handgun and the bullet leaves the property and hits somebody. Okay? There can easily be a duty there because theoretically, the person on your property is under your control. That's a fact question, but theoretically, that could happen. In Mangeris and in Sanchez, the Supreme Court looked at the facts and that they were nowhere near similar to your hypothetical of the man discharging the handgun on the property. In Mangeris, somebody leaves the massage parlor, gets into a cab, goes to a remote location, and murders the cab driver. The Nevada Supreme Court said, as a matter of law, deciding a 12b-5 issue, that's not foreseeable. There is no way we can charge the owner of the massage parlor with foreseeing that these events are going to take place. Sanchez is the same, although the facts are different. That is somebody getting a prescription at Walmart, misusing the drugs, and hitting somebody in the car. As we know, the determination of duty and foreseeability is not strictly a matter of law, not strictly a matter of logic. There's a lot of human behavior Right, expectation.
So here's my follow-up question. This is where I was going with all those torture hypotheticals, which I admit, you know, just on the spot, they weren't that well phrased. I should have probably written the question down so it was a little more clear. Something, as just a colloquial thing, foreseeability is such that if something has happened before, right, the next time it happens, you have a pretty strong argument that it's foreseeable. So in the context of a 12b-5 motion, why don't they at least get discovery on the question of whether something exactly like this has ever happened before? Now, granted, I've never read of anything like this happening in the Aria before. I think we would have read something, there's another fire bomb, Los Angeles Boulevard of Flamingo, right? But that's just media attention. How do we know without discovery that this exact same factual situation has never happened before at the Aria?
Well, there's no evidence, of course, that it had.
Well, you're not going to without discovery, right?
Well, no. Discovery might not reveal that. The question on foreseeability and duty, even if something like this had happened once before somewhere, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's foreseeable. The question of creating a duty out of foreseeability means, are we going to charge, in this case the ARIA, with knowledge that something like this might happen just because it happened one time somewhere else? And the answer is, the Supreme Court has said, in both Mangeris and in Sanchez, the Supreme Court said, look, there just isn't any duty to foresee this happen. It is too remote and too unusual and too out of the ordinary, and we're not going to place a legal duty on somebody because...
But that's my question. If it's happened a bunch of times before, then it's not out of the ordinary before. And how do we know it's never happened before?
We know
at some point it becomes ordinary if it happens enough.
That's right.
Prostitution is, I don't want to say ordinary at a casino, but we all know it happens. And, you know, if this were just a prostitute case where nobody got killed, we'd probably say, yeah, well, even though that's a criminal act, it happens so much that it becomes ordinary. Now, granted, like you said, I've never heard of anything like this happening before, but how do we know without discovery it's never happened before and it's not ordinary?
Well, it's not ordinary. When all we have that's happening on the premises is to take the complaint at face value, which we do under 12b-5, is to say some individuals are arguing in the valet area. And the video shows, even though we take the complaint at face value, the video does not show a gun. And it certainly does not show Mr. Harris with a gun. Okay? It flat out does not. And to say that it is ordinary, and one would expect that if several individuals are arguing and in a dispute, and there might have been five or six people involved in all of this, that a killing and a shooting might happen on the Las Vegas Strip a half mile away, that a car might careen and hit a taxi cab, which might explode, and therefore, Aria, when you see several people arguing, you have to act to make sure that those events don't take place. A shooting, a murder, and an exploding cab. And Judge Silver got it right when she said, if you see some people arguing, what are you supposed to do? Okay? Are you supposed to detain all six of them? And then when you're sued for false arrest, you say, well, here's the reason we did it. Somebody might have a gun and they might chase somebody else down Las Vegas Boulevard and they might kill them and it might careen into a taxi cab which might explode and kill somebody. There has to be more back to the concept of creating a legal duty.
And Mr. Kennedy, I think Judge Kao's question is focusing on the second issue in this case, the discovery. Case is dismissed. There's no discovery. It never gets going. Excuse me. Ms. Wirtz has alleged that a gun was brandished and that there are prior incidents. So doesn't this possibly bring this back into the range of the Mandalay Bay case that Judge Silver asked about? Because it's not really the exploding taxi. What we're talking about is whether there's a dispute, there's a gun brandished. Whether that gun might be used on the Las Vegas Strip in front of the Aria or nearby isn't all that unforeseeable. Whether a taxi's going to explode is. But somebody shooting a gun, and as Judge Kao posited, and bullets going somewhere and hurting someone, that may be foreseeable. We just don't foresee the final event, but a third party being injured is not all that unforeseeable.
Here's why the rule is not going to apply, at least the Mandalay Bay is not. Mandalay Bay firmly establishes and recognizes the rule that an innkeeper owes a duty of care to people on its premises, whether patrons or guests or third parties. There's no question about that. That's the existence of the legal duty. In this case, as the Nevada Supreme Court has decided repeatedly, there is no duty to unknown members of the public for acts, wrongful acts that take place off premises. And that's precisely the common law, and all of the cases that we cited, some with more egregious and outrageous facts than this, they all say the same thing. You can't charge the bar owner, the store owner, or the innkeeper with things that happen off premises, even where you...
I thought you had conceded that it was possible. You weren't going to say never can you have something off premises held where the innkeeper is held liable.
It's
possible they could be, and here there was no discovery because the case was dismissed at the beginning.
That's right, because the facts, which are undisputed, show that this is so remote. Because remember, we don't establish legal duties because something is possible. That takes us back to Paul's graph, where it is possible that the exploding fireworks can cause something to fall and hit somebody on the head. But there's no legal duty because it's a matter of law that's unforeseeable. You're right. It's always possible, particularly in hindsight, when you look back and you say, well, of course that's possible. It has happened. But that's not how we establish legal duties, because the duty places an obligation on the innkeeper to foresee that as something that is likely to occur. And that's the genesis of Mangeris, and that's also the genesis of Sanchez and the other cases we cited.
Thank you so
much
for your presentation. And to hear Paul's graph takes me back to the first case, right? Of torts. First case in law school.
So, Ms. Rooks, let me ask you the flip side of the question that I asked your counterpart. Your argument is essentially they should have detained him. So you've got an angry guy with a gun who might be drunk. He was in this club. He's, you know, you don't quite know what happened, but he's angry. His, you know, his adrenaline's going. He's got a gun, right? The casino may or may not have a duty to people off the premises, but they certainly do have a duty to people on the premises. Isn't it more dangerous to people on the premises to keep him there rather than boot him off the property? I mean, if you kept him there, if you already kept him there and you shot a guest, wouldn't you be sitting here arguing, oh, they should have booted him off the property?
That, Your Honor, is presuming that there is a duty, which, of course, we would argue that there is. What they do in response to that duty, whether it be boot them off the property or retain them, is a question of, or detain them on the property, is a question of reasonableness. And what we would say is that that is a question that, of fact, that should go to the jury. Did the RA act reasonably under the circumstances in order to take precautions to avoid harm to persons on premises?
How do you distinguish, though, the Sanchez case, as he's just mentioned, when that was a 12b-5 motion as well?
Your Honor, it was a 12b-5 motion, but in the procedural context of that case, the defendant driver was actually sued first. Discovery was conducted that uncovered some evidence against the pharmacy, and then there was a motion to amend to bring Walmart, the pharmacy, in. And so there had been, in fact, some evidence in that case. But Sanchez actually is the case that I wanted to point the court to, because the Nevada Supreme Court in that case had the opportunity to say, as the ARIA would have this court find, that there are no set of circumstances in which a business would be liable to a person off premises. And in fact, that is exactly what the ARIA has contended throughout the entirety of this case and these proceedings, that there are simply no set of circumstances under which liability could lie for an individual off premises, not a patron. And what the Nevada Supreme Court did in Sanchez was to say, look, there may be a set of circumstances. In fact, the pharmacy board could have enacted regulations that imposed affirmative obligations on the pharmacy, but that wasn't what we saw in this case. That was their finding in the Sanchez case. And the dissent actually strongly disagreed with that. Justices Cherry and Seda wrote with Terry writing for the dissent that they would have found a duty and that they would have reversed the dismissal and they would have, at a minimum, sent it back for discovery. And so instead of saying, as it well could have, when faced with the issue, no, there is never a duty under any set of circumstances to a non-patron, the court said, well, that we're going to leave open that door. And this door is wide open for the finding that, at a minimum, discovery should be conducted to uncover, just as Your Honors alluded to, the totality of circumstances. Judge Tao, the answer is we simply don't know the totality of circumstances and the incidents of prior misconduct. Now, whether there be a fireball in the strip, I haven't read that one either prior to this case, but we certainly know about prostitution, gangs, and criminal conduct on the premises of casinos, RA in particular. And in fact, the Nevada Gaming Commission sent the three prior letters to the RA warning about prostitution, gangs, drug activity on the premises of licensees. And it specifically informed licensees that we will hold you responsible for criminal conduct that transpires on the premises of your licensees. That is an affirmative obligation, and at a minimum, plaintiffs should have been permitted to conduct discovery to ascertain the totality of circumstances and the prior similar incidents of misconduct which are directed to the court's attention by the initial letter from the Gaming Control Board.
Right, but in those cases, you know, you have drug use and prostitution on the property, and, you know, assuming, taking the facts in the light, most people believe that all happened, they already should have known about it. But that usually results, if it results in harm to anybody at all, it's harm on the premises. I mean, what are the chances that an act of prostitution occurring on the area is going to affect anybody outside of the area? So the existence of a legal duty being a question of law, although, you know, it may have elements of fact in it, right? The argument you're making here is based on the occurrence of things like prostitution and drug use, which in the past have only harmed people on the property if they harmed anybody at all, that we should then, as a matter of law, say that there could be a duty to someone in the intersection of Las Vegas Boulevard and Flumen. I know we're taking out of time, but you can certainly answer that question.
Thank you.
That's a determination that we have to make as a matter of law. And so how would discovery on a question of law matter?
It matters, Your Honor, because under this